You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand and even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow, I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
You are listening to the Lucha Central Podcast Network. And now, Lucha Central Weekly. Hello and welcome to an exclusive Lucha Central Weekly podcast interview. This is Miranda Morales being joined by Dusty Murphy and Brendan Barr, the trio that brings you all of your Lucha Libre news every week on the Lucha Central Weekly podcast English edition. And it is our honor and pleasure to welcome a man who is a staple of West Coast wrestling and Lucha Libre. He is the owner of Pro Wrestling Revolution, the promotion and training academy, as well as the man behind lucha-masks.com. Please welcome back to the show, Gabriel Ramirez. Gabe, how's it going?
Oh my God, what an intro. Thank you. I'm going to have to like steal that clip and use it for my ringtone. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Anytime. As I mentioned, welcome back. You were actually the first person we had interviewed when we started our show last year. So it's, you know, poetic justice, really, that we bring you back around a little over a year later. Really, we spoke with you right when the global pandemic was hitting.
Right.
So to start off with, we just kind of want to know what's been happening with you for the past year with you and also Pro Wrestling Revolution.
Well, I mean, it's, you know, it's almost like we're beating a dead horse, but with the pandemic, everything stopped for everyone, right? And for me, the only thing I could find any kind of sanehood in was the Lucha-Mask website with all the masks that we were producing. It allowed me to live wrestling or Lucha Libre without having the events. Which was very cool, you know, that it's almost like a promoter reaching out to talent and said, hey, you know, I got these masks and they're cool and they can make money and we'll split. And it was almost like doing a show and getting talent booked and so on. But in this case, for lucha-mask.com, I had about 50 wrestlers at one time and it was great. Obviously, I still have this site up. I don't know if I'll take this site down ever because it's a reminder of, you know, what we went through. And something I want to share with my kids as time gets further away from this, you know, knock on wood, right? But it was scary. It still is a bit more, but I think we're much closer to the finish line than we were when we first all got shut down and didn't know what was going on, right? But, you know, if it wasn't for lucha-mask.com, I don't know what I would have done. My mind, you know, my mental health, I don't know what would have happened, you know, having everything pulled underneath from you in a matter of seconds and not knowing, you know, what's next. It's very hard to wrap your head around of, and especially when I've been doing this since 1996, it's almost 25 years of doing this on a daily basis, just getting ripped away from you is something that's very, very hard to deal with.
Yeah. So I we already touched on, so I'm just going to jump right in. We are winding down in theory, and Lucha Deathmatch may have been born out of this, but Dusty and I, in particular, and other people we're friends with, have large collections of your masks. We view your masks as very accessible collector's items. Do you see a future for Lucha Dash Masks doing more collectible merchandise moving forward?
I'm trying to. You know, the problem is, though, is I run the academy, you know, so I have 35-plus students running at one time. So I have to maintain trainers and students and schedules and potential new students and leads. But then I'm also doing events. So then I got to deal with events, insurances, talent, you know, artwork and so on. So I got to focus on one thing, you know what I mean? And I loved my dip in the pool with merchandising. I applaud Kevin Kleinrock for doing what he does. Yeah. But I don't envy him because it's a lot of work. And dealing with 2-3 egos for one show is one thing. Dealing with 50 egos at one time is enough.
That's what they don't tell you about going into merchandising, I'm sure. Or else that may have changed your mind going into it. But that's such a good point about it's a very different structure from going to live events, a promotion, even an academy, to doing merchandising.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if you guys have seen them, but I am doing the little Lucha Minis.
Little
pops, and
I love the Lucha.
I'm trying to get those out more. I got the Penta, the Joker style ones coming out pretty soon, and I got the Phoenix ones coming with. I still have some Wagner, but those are handmade, and so I can't get those out as fast as the masks. But I'm still going to get those out just because they're cool and there's a need for them and people enjoy them. I still have masks left on the site. I'm just not producing any new ones. If we ever sell off the inventory and they go, hey, I want these because I want to collect or so on. Because I do get hit up once in a while. I was like, oh, my God, I'm missing these two masks from my collection. I have all but these two. Yeah. And I'm like, I can't ask for two to be made. I have to go home and make a whole set. And then I got to contact the Rustwick and go, hey, I'm going to sell two more. You know, what's the cut on that? You know what I mean? But eventually, you know, I may do it just because – I feel like I owe that to the people who did support this during that time frame. There's some people that have sent me images. I have a gentleman who owns every single mask that I ever made, and he has more than I do because some of them I don't even have copies of myself. And I'm like, oh, I'll buy that one off you because I don't have it. I don't have that one. So it's very cool to see people like take to it the way they did. I mean, it started off with Ultimo Dragon be the first person that said, yeah, go for it, no problem. And Ultimo is obviously very well followed and very versed, and everyone knows who he is. But when we signed Penta and Phoenix on, that is when, you know, it was incredible. I've said this all the time to people who listen, but I forgot which release it was, but for Penta, we sold 180 face covers in 2 hours.
Wow.
That was the one I didn't get.
That's the one that's missing from his
collection.
That's the one,
third collection, right?
That out there. Yeah.
You know, so if you imagine 180 for Phoenix, I'm sorry, for Penta, and then like 100 for Phoenix and so on, and then the other ones, it completely snowballed. You know, it was to a point where it was my wife, my daughter, and I, and we were shipping, receiving designers, you know, go to DHL, pick them up. And this is all during a pandemic, where you can't be close to nobody. And then the guy, you know, and then DHL would say, I'll be there today, but today meant 11:59 before midnight. And then I will lose a whole day for shipping. So I started having to drive to DHL and get temperature checked and a face cover and only one person at a time and then get in the line. So it completely took over, you know, our lives, which again, if it wasn't for that, I don't know what we would have done. You can only binge watch Netflix for so long before you're like, what else? I mean, I even watch a telenovela on Netflix. I watch El Dragon on Netflix, and that thing has like 2 million episodes per season, right? And I watch every single one, and it ended, and I was so empty. I was like, now what am I going to do? Like, what's next? You know, so that's how bad it got with, you know, TV, you know, binging and stuff. But yeah, it was incredible. I got to know my local mail, et cetera, shipping place very well, because you were walking in with 400 packages. I think at one point we were doing 500 orders a week.
Nice.
You know, so can you imagine all those packages walking into your local mail shop and they're like, oh, hey, how are you?
Because they're understaffed too.
Right. Yeah. Like, you do know there's other places you can go to, right? You know what I mean? But it was a blessing in disguise. I got, you know, I got to educate myself into other parts of wrestling, the business. The one thing that people don't understand is licensing, as far as not bootlegging stuff, which is something that I did not want to do. My envision was, if I'm going to do this and I'm going to use your face, your mask, and I want you to promote it, then I'm going to put money into your pocket. So not only was I making money off it, but I was also paying the talent for their work. And they weren't wrestling either. They didn't have any shows. They weren't going anywhere. They had nothing to, you know, to generate money to feed themselves, family, or fend for anything. So a lot of them were trying to open their own little, you know, taco stands and you know crepes and you name it, right? You know, and so for me, if I could help them out, then I think it was only good karma in the long run that now they would turn the corner. I'm doing events. When I call them to do a show, can you imagine me calling LA Park, you know, hey, brother, I got a show for you. And then he'll go, well, yeah, are you going to pay me for all those masks you sold that you didn't give me any money on? Or it's like, of course, you know, thank you for that friendship. Thank you. Whatever you need, let's do it. So for me, you know, I had to remember and keep focused that I couldn't be greedy. It was the worst time ever to be greedy. You had to do the right thing. Mm-hmm. And as a promoter, I had a main focus that when this finally turned over, I am a live event promoter. This is what I do. And I wanted to make sure that I was on good standing with everyone I worked with.
Yeah. That's great. Go ahead.
You mentioned kind of negotiating with the performers, and I wondered, you know, Pro Wrestling Revolution had a really rare singles match from Il Del Santo when he faced Ultimo Dragon. Like, yes. How do you talk to someone? Like, Il Del Santo's primarily known for his trios work now. I mean, he never really wrestled singles matches, but he wrestled one for you guys. Like, I mean,
a lot of wine.
Yeah, how do you do that? Yeah, wine.
A lot of wine. A lot of wine. A lot of wine. And then when you think you're done, more wine.
I'm writing this down. Hold on. Thank you. Okay, yes.
Pinot Noir. Trust me. Pinot Noir. You're good.
Genius. Genius.
You know, the thing, it goes back to having solid friendships, you know, being upfront with somebody, being able to tell somebody, yeah, I can't pay you that because I can't afford it. Thank you for your offer. Or thank you for the opportunity. Or, yes, I'm going to pay you that. And whether I draw one person or a million, coming through with that money, paying them, being upfront, just not living up to the stereotype that quote unquote promoters have, at least on the independent world, that we're nothing but, you know, TV sitcom used car salesmen. You know what I mean? And that's the last thing I ever want to be. You know what I mean? So I've had a friendship with Hijo del Santo. I don't know if you guys know or not, but Hijo del Santo and Blue Demon Jr. were my tag champions. You know, and that's unheard of. You know, that will never happen again. And trust me when I tell you, that will never happen again for any other promotion in the world. Trust me. It'll never happen. You know what I mean? But I was able to, you know, I've had a great friendship with Blue Demon over the years, Blue Demon Jr. At one point, he was a silent partner in Pro Wrestling Revolution. I was celebrating a 5-year at the time, you know, in business, which I thought I'd never get to. And I was talking to him. I said, hey, man, I want to do something cool for our 5-year. Any ideas? And he goes, well, bring Nico El Santo. I'm like, yeah, good luck. He goes, I'll take care of it. And this is a time where they actually had a speaking relationship, and it happened. And I was like, really? I was like, and then I picked them up and I'm like, oh my God, it's really going to happen. And they went over for the tag titles. And before I could defend it, that's when Hijo del Santo hurt his neck. I believe, I don't know where it was, but I think it was LA Park gave him a martinete and something happened to his neck. And then Santo was out for a good while. And I never got able to defend the titles. So, but, you know, I have my little niche in Lucha history by having them as tag champions. But I maintained an open relationship with him and his office. I've always had that friendship with Blue Demon. But I have a really strong, if anything, brotherhood, friendship with Ultimo Dragon. We met, I booked him for a show during our King of Indies where WWN had come out to the Bay Area, and I met him for the first time. We spoke, we got along great, and we've always maintained a friendship, consistently talking on WhatsApp, whether he's in Japan or Mexico or Cuba. And then one time we were talking, and he was at Hijo del Santo's house, and they're really good friends as well. And they had just finished doing some shows in Japan. I think it was for Lucha Fiesta, I believe, at Korakuen Hall. And they were both on the phone, and he wanted to say hi, and we're talking, and then we ended up just, leaving it open. We'll talk soon, whatever. And so when I was at Dragomania at Arena Mexico for Ultimo, the following day, it's infamous that he has his, great next day party. And we were there, and Hijo del Santo was there, and, wine and more wine and more wine. And before I left, we had an agreement that he'd come out, and they wanted to wrestle each other. I don't know if it ever had happened. They've tagged and they've been across, but they never wrestled singles. And I said, hey, if you guys are into it, why would I say no to it? And they were into it, and it happened. And, I've been very grateful and very fortunate. It may look like I'm this big time promoter that made it happen, but it kind of fell into my lap because there's just the friends that I have, and I'm not embarrassed to say it. I'd rather be lucky than good sometimes, and very fortunate to have that match and, have those MS tag champions. But I think that all comes back to the respect that I've earned in our industry for just being upfront, being honest, which is almost unheard of nowadays, right? And I that's why when I get people talking bad about promoters, there's a lot of us out there that are not like that, that we are upfront and we tell you the truth. And I wish, people would understand that is, we're not all that used car salesman on Three's Company that you used to.
You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand and even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow, I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
Yeah, I can absolutely back you up on that. I have worked with a number of promoters in various ways, and I've never gotten that vibe. I was very nervous and dubious working with people that I didn't know because of that reputation.
Right.
But just to support your statement, this is absolutely just a reputation. There are a number of good people like yourself out there that are working on reputation rather than a good reputation rather right. than quick well, profit.
And it's all cyclical, like you just talked about with the relationships that you had in building your inventory and partnerships in Lucha Dash Masks, and the fact that it was important for you to share those proceeds with
yes.
the luchadors that you were working with. It's, of course, a good karma, but it's also just a good business practice. And that isn't something that's built overnight. It's a reflection of your business acumen, but also how you value your relationships and partnerships
right.
In and outside of the ring. So, I'm sure it wasn't an epiphany. I think it was something that seems very deeply rooted, and it flows within all of the lanes that you cover in merchandising and promotion and, of course, in the training academy.
No, absolutely. Even when I first approached Hijo del Santo and their staff about doing official face covers for them, and they wanted to know the breakdowns and so on, I was like, "Oh, cool! This is it. It's very cut and dry. Everyone gets this." And oh, great, let's do it. But I needed to sew on their official label on all my face covers because they wanted to make sure that it was an official product. Mm-hmm. So then that adds a little bit more work and so on. But that's why every time I posted something on Instagram, anywhere I posted the mask, I always said 100% licensed, you know what I mean? It's approved, you know, there was no bootlegs. And there was tons of bootlegs, you know. I read an article somewhere, there was like close to like, I don't know, almost $4 million around there. Off Etsy alone of bootleg Lucha Libre face covers. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And that's a lot of money that got taken home. Yeah. And more power to you, whoever did it. You know, you have to survive. I understand that. But wouldn't it have been nice for the talent who created the identity for you to make money off that they broke something off to them? I thought it was only fair. You know what I mean? But, absolutely. You know, for me, you know, I had the official tag for Hijo del Santo. I had the same thing for the Dr. Wagner Dynasty. I had to have there also, if you guys picked one up, that came with an official as well. So everything I did was official, even with Cain Velasquez. You know, with Cain was something very cool as well that we did the face cover for Cain, but everything, including my part, was donated to Second Harvest Valley here in the Bay Area. And I think we ended up donating, like 48,000 meals because the day we donated the money, somebody was matching you, ended up being three times the amount. So ended up being like $6,000 from what we did, ended up being like 48,000 meals. And, you know, that's the stuff that I wasn't doing it to like say, hey, look at me. I was doing it because it was needed. Yeah. And it was absolutely needed. You know, I did stuff that I didn't, you know, go share online because I wanted, you know, that self-gratitude. But there was stuff here in Gilroy where I live in San Jose. We're nearby sitting in Gilroy. There was fires and stuff. And there was partners that I've worked with who own pizza parlors and so on who were trying to go feed firemen with pizzas. And they were asking for help. Well, I'd call her and I said, here, Cammy, here's X amount of money. Go buy pizzas. And she's like, are you sure? I was like, well, maybe today I'm able to pay for this. Maybe tomorrow someone can help me. You know what I mean? I needed to keep that mentality during this pandemic. I had to keep the idea that I was so – oh, man, I get emotional. I was so afraid that it was going to happen to me. Yeah. And I wanted to make sure that if I needed the help, someone would come back and help me when I needed it. And so I just did my best, you know, and knock on wood, you know, we're still here. You know, I did have some issues with, you know, family wise. I lost my grandfather to COVID. He was diagnosed on a Saturday and Sunday, a week later, the following Sunday, he died. You know what I mean? So to me, I took it serious and I was able to filter the negativity of what was around me. And I just put my head forward. I'm like, you know what? Let's sell merch. Let's live vicariously with these masks. Like we were doing events and promotions and videos and we do what we did. And now I went from like 500 a week to like five a month because nobody buys them anymore. Cause you know, we're turning the corner and I'm okay with that. Mm-hmm. That just means that we're going back to normal. Yeah.
There are still a bunch of them up for sale on the website. I do check regularly.
They are all for you in the taking. Those are all yours.
Yes. Yeah.
I'm throwing that out there to other people too, because as I mentioned, there are other collectors. So knowing that you're probably not going to restock. This is
no.
You
no,
should scoop them up.
Yeah, especially the Lucha Brothers ones. A lot of things have changed in their structure as far as licensing goes. So people do want those. I can, without going too deep into detail, you might want to pick them up because I probably won't be making them and they have no interest in making them. So, you know, pick them up.
Well, you know, you were mentioning that we're, you know, changing lanes. The world's changing. We're coming out of the other side of the pandemic. One thing we talk about a lot on the show, we start off every week, is the road back to shows, kind of highlighting promotions' journeys to getting back to live shows. So we were wondering, what is that journey like for Pro Wrestling Revolution and yourself getting back to live shows?
It's nerve-wracking. It's nervous because, you know, when I had the face covers, everybody in the world needed them. not everybody in the world needs Lucha Libre shows. So it's a different outlook. But for me, it's very exciting. It's you know how they say you ride a bike and you don't forget how to ride the bike. Well, I haven't forgotten how to ride the bike, but I'm still getting on that bike going, man, here we go. Here we go. You know, for example, you see Thursday, July 15th, there's our first show back from, I think, what, 16, 17 months. My last show was February 2020. That's when we had Psycho Clown and Tejano and, you know, it's just a great show, sold out. We had these huge plans of the building. I think the building at the point in time, we had 15 plus, and we were going to open the other side of the gymnasium to add up another 600. And if that sold, we were going to go to a bigger building, because we were on this huge, you know, knock on wood, but we averaged 700 minimal to, you know, close to 2,000 every show. Wow. But it's not that I'm, you know, lucky now, because a lot of promoters try to bring the same talent in, but it's marketing, and you have to market, you have to do it correctly, you have to know your target audience. And we were on the roll, man. After the show, I had spoken to a larger sponsor who wanted to, you know, to bring in more people. It was just great. And then when that got pulled away, it's like, oh. But now I got our first call for July 17th. You know, it's your first show. It's we're doing them with Gordon Biersch. I don't know how many of you guys drink Gordon Biersch beer out where you're from, but here it's huge. And they have a new lager called Don Gordo. So it's a heavy set guy with a gordo, you know, he's a gordito on the beer. And we have a luchador dressed as Don Gordo who wrestles on these events.
Naturally.
You know, right. You know, why wouldn't we, right?
Marketing. And,
you know, marketing, right? And so now, you know, we have the, with the contacts, with the person who was making my face covers is now also making my gear for my guys. So he made the Don Gordo gear, and I had a belt made, and we have a custom canvas and aprons, and it's branding, marketing. Yeah. And so they gave us three shows. And then my friendship and partnerships that I've had prior to the pandemic started coming back up. And then the city of San Jose, that does a lot of community work with the families, they're trying to get people, they were trying to do it prior to the pandemic, and now even more with the pandemic, you know, turning the corner, is getting people out of their homes and going to a park, you know what I mean, and putting a phone down and a laptop or tablet or what have you. And so they do stuff like music in the park and, you know, live bands and you know, or sometimes they have things where they have like those brincolines, you know, the jumpers and mechanical bulls and stuff. Well, prior to the pandemic, we had a bunch of shows set up. Those, you know, went away. And all of a sudden, I got a call and said, hey, you know, we have the same contract, blah, blah, blah. You're a contractor, you know, with the city. Can you do 7 shows in a month and a half?
Yes.
Okay. Let's do it. So starting July 15th, for July 17th till the end of August, I have a show every Saturday. And then you throw in every other Thursday, roughly, to do shows for Gordon Biersch. So now I'm looking at, you know, starting Thursday of just like full-fledged promoting and talent and ring rent, not ring rentals, but ring, because I own my own stuff. So set up the ring, tear down the ring. And then guess what? On Saturday, tear down the ring, set up the ring. And and like I told my guys, you know, while we were down is when we come back up, we got to be ready to hit the ground running. You know, we can't, you know, we can't try to dust off the rust out of nowhere. So we've been training for a minute here in San Jose. And then yesterday, like I was telling you guys prior, we did our first ring setup in 16 months just to see what happened to the ring. Did the wood expand? Did the wood break? Did the metal? I mean, because it was stored away in our trailer. You know, I have my own stuff. So I had it parked in front of my house this whole entire time. And luckily only – well – if you guys ever built the ring, you know, you'd understand that the boards
many
fit
times.
Perfect. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, the boards fit perfectly in February 2020. Yep. When I set it up yesterday, it didn't fit. Somehow, one board did not fit no more in the ring. We don't know what happened. Huh. So we don't know if the boards expanded with the heat or something. So we had to get a saw and zoot, cut the board in half, and now it fits again. And I am sure that once we get back to normal, we're going to have to get under the board because it's eventually going to fit. And, you know, you got to buy tape and boards and the turnbuckles ripped and all that. Everything's good and just everything. And, you know, and we did it, and now we're good, and then we had to tear it down, and now we got to clean the trailer up, because after a show and you're there all day, there's garbage in that trailer. You don't, you know, just want to, come on, let's go, I'm tired, let's go. She figured, hey, we have a show in 2 weeks, after that, we'll clean it up then. 16 months later, the garbage is still there, you know what I mean? So, you know, we're ready to go, and I'm excited, you know, to have our talent, who stayed with me during the pandemic. Our academy did not shut down. We had online classes the entire time. Obviously, we couldn't train in the ring. And a lot of my guys were like, well, how are you going to train? We don't have a ring. But I guarantee you, they were trained. We worked, obviously, on promos. What better way to do promos than when you're on a camera or microphone like we are doing now? But promos, psychology of a wrestling match. You know, why are you doing the moves? And where do they belong? And what's the spots for it? And show them great matches and showing them bad matches. You can learn equally from both. But separate from wrestling, I was teaching them marketing. How to market yourself as a wrestler, social media-wise. You know, how to do your own taxes as an independent contractor, how to license yourself, how to do a trademark. I actually would bring food and nutrition talent to come on and show them, you know, good eating habits, you know, how to maintain their weight, how to track weight, what they should eat, you know, all those things. Then I brought someone who helped them directly with their taxes. Then I would bring somebody on to actually show them social media marketing experts, you know, that I've had friendships over time that they came in and look, if you're going to do your Facebook or your Instagram, this is how you separate them. That's how you connect them. This is how you get followers. I'd give them classes on how to do videos, you know, both portrait and horizontal, why one's meant to the other, how to use a phone and not give me low quality. So when you give a promoter something, you give them great quality.
Yes.
I as a promoter can't tell you how many times I get like these animated GIFs. You know what I mean? For like, I'll see you next Friday. And I'm like, I can't use this. You know, it's like, if I was on AOL, maybe, but I can't do this now. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Right. So, you know, I did as much as I could, you know, and then here in Santa Clara County, where I'm at in San Jose, California, we had little glitches of openings. So I'd give them open gym, one person at a time only, just to get their cardio up. And then little by little, I had them getting tested weekly. So we got tested weekly, and even though we were negative, I'd pair them up, only two at a time. And then after a month of that, then two more at a time, but now we're going to add an extra person watching. We had we had class with everyone training, all negative COVID tests, all temperature checked for like 3 weeks. And then come September, shut down again. And that's when we really thought, you know what? We're not coming out of this. This is over. You know what I mean? This is over.
Yeah, then that was a lot of.
It was just too much.
Yeah.
We pretty much told ourselves this is it. And that was probably a bit more darker than shutting down in February. Because in February, there's a lot of question marks. But come September, it's like, okay, we've been through all it all. We get it, you know, and it goes up, it goes down. We wear masks, we do this. There's no winning, you know. We just say, you know what, I think this might be it. And my lease was up pretty soon, so I had to decide, do I re-sign the lease? And they don't want just a one-year lease. They want a five-year lease. Mm-hmm. You know, why would I do that? And we thought there was no ending. And without getting political, then you have, you know, the buffoon that we had, you know, running the country that made it difficult to overall even see, you know, a glimmer of hope.
Light at the end of the tunnel.
I totally get it. I can tell you from personal experience that a lot of gym owners and school owners made the opposite decision from you. So, you know, a huge deal for you to do that. All the evidence at that point, especially like you said, that darker point, just really made people afraid to take that risk. So,
yep.
I mean, thank you for doing that, because I say it all the time on Twitter, schools are important, and good schools are even more important. So,
well, we try hard. I mean, for example, we've had Lady Apache, you know. Absolutely stable to Lucha community. She was our trainer, got almost 7 months, and she was only going home in February after our show. She's only going home to check in with the family, you know, kids. I mean, she's a mother, you know, she's a grandmother, you know, she was taking care of all kinds of stuff, and she was going to come back a month later, right? Mm-hmm. And then she was living, you know, with my wife and I here, and it was great, you know. I mean, for me, waking up and then getting to talk shop with Lady Apache, come on.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
It's like she's been wrestling since she was 14 years old. 14, you know. So I was like, lady, you know, in Japan, Akira Hokuto and this and Bullet Kano and, you know, Gran Apache, all of these things, right? And it, I learned so much, and the students were learning fabulous. And prior to Lady Apache, my guys, my students were training with Skyde.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So then they had Skyde for almost a year and a half. So, you know, Lucha was – it's a passion. It's a lifestyle. Yeah. And it is. It was great. It couldn't get no better. You know, Skyde was living here and learning from him and talking to him, Lucha, and talking Lucha and why and no, why not this and why did this work? Why didn't it work? And why'd you do it this way? And it was just great. And then you add Lady and it was awesome. And she'll be back in a month. And we cried when she left. And yeah, well, now now it's like, hey, how are you on WhatsApp? My new friend, you know, for Lucha communication. You know what I mean? So it's been great. And I just can't wait to see all my friends again and be able to do shows and then have something else to bitch about
because you already alluded to it. There's always something going on. Yeah. Always a little something.
You know, we got to see how that comes out, man.
So what can we look forward to? You mentioned you've got dates, but do you have any like big excitement, anything you want to push? I mean, you know.
We're going back to normal in that sense. My first show that I consider like my show, that I'm not doing it for somebody else or their expectations, my first full show with that I, you know, I'm booking stuff is September 25th in San Jose, and we're bringing in L.A. Park and the Sun, but I'm bringing back in Rayo de Jalisco Jr. And, I remember – my dad taking me to Guadalajara as a kid and having him come out and, you know, you hear Guadalajara, Guadalajara. I'm like, oh my God, you know, the song and the mask and the charro outfit. So I brought him in, not just because it brought back memories of me and my dad, but I want to do it for my dad as well. He was a huge supporter during the pandemic for me, you know, on masks. My dad would go like to a grocery store or something and they'd see his mask. And he goes, my son makes them. My son makes them. You guys want it? You guys want one? And then my dad would come to the house and goes, hey, this lady wanted to buy this mask. He'd give me the money. I'd give him the mask. And he'd run back to the store and go, look, my son made it. My son. I mean, come on. You know what I mean? That's awesome. That's so cool. That's my so dad would go cool. everywhere and promote his son making these masks. And mijo los hace. Ida. My son. And, you know, that's awesome. It's hard enough in this industry that you don't get support from friends and family. But here I have my dad screaming with a face cover on, you know, that you must have because my son makes them. And matter of fact, my daughter went to his house not too long ago after everyone was vaccinated and so on. And she texts, she goes, Dad, Grandpa has 44 of your masks in his bedroom. I go, 44? She goes, yeah, I counted them. She sent me a picture, right? So I'll have to send my dad an invoice pretty soon. Cause that's
I was
going
to say, it sounds like you were surprised because it wasn't supposed to happen.
I had no I give him one here and there, but I guess over time they add it up and go, here, Dad. He goes, oh, mijo, you have a new one? Yeah, here. And I give him one. But never did I think he'd end up with 44 of them, you know? Jeez.
Family.
Yeah. Right, family, right? Family. And of course, you know, I'm your son, mijo. You don't charge your father. Okay, Dad, I'll pay the pound in my pocket. No problem. Thanks, Dad. You know, and then after September, we have in October. In October, we're going back to San Francisco, where I've been doing shows with John O'Connell High School for like, I don't know, 10 years now, whatever. They're all fundraisers. So I have Ultimo Dragon confirmed for that. I have two, without giving any names, I have two ROH Lucha talented wrestlers from ROH that need them get confirmation from ROH so I can have them. And then in November, I have Psycho Clown and I have Psychosis and, you know, so I'm bringing them back to Santa Rosa in November. So those are my three dates that I have that I say that are mine that I promote and bring talent in. But I also have the shows, like I mentioned before, you know, with the city of San Jose and Gordon Biersch. I have a show coming up also in September with the San Jose Earthquakes of MLS.
Cool.
You know, and we're trying to pick up where we left off. You know, prior to pandemic in February, we had close to 50 shows, you know, set up for 2020. That's why we were so excited. We had so much going on. Yeah. But I feel that You know, staying relevant was huge. You know, staying relevant in everyone's eyes, whether it be with face covers or I was posting matches, you know, weekly and just trying to stay relevant. And it's almost like I didn't want people to forget about me. So I don't know if I was doing that for fans or if I was doing it for myself. You know what I mean? I just did not want to be forgotten. I was terrified. Terrified that people were going to just say, you know, who cares about wrestling, you know? And at first I was very anti seeing AEW and WWE wrestling. I don't know if I was angry or if I was jealous. I just got to be flat out honest. I've never admitted this to anybody, but I think now is the time. I didn't know if I would be jealous or angry. I didn't know if I was angry because they were doing it and I couldn't. I didn't know if it was a money situation. I don't know how they were getting away with it. Or do they just have balls and I didn't? They were just going to say, you know, caution to the wind, right? Let's just freaking do it and see what happens. And I just didn't understand. And I was very frustrated and angry. I was very, very adamant. I helped Papo Esco and his podcast here with Lucha Central. And every time they brought that up, I was so against it because I didn't know. I don't know what I was feeling. It was completely new. And maybe it was jealousy or maybe it was just anger. I don't know what it was. But if it wasn't for them doing shows, again, I think wrestling would have took a huger hit that with them wrestling than not wrestling. And if you can only imagine them not being on television, the network's great and all, and YouTube, I get it, but nothing's ever going to beat watching current talent wrestling and what's current in front of you. And I think they hold a big reason why that wrestling is going to hit the ground running as well now. I mean, look, AEW just did a show with fans and it sold out. You know, I mean, almost like nothing ever happened, right? And that's what's scary. Were fans going to return? You know, who was going to return? Were they not going to return? Face covers? No face covers? Because at one point in time, guys, as a promoter, I was being told I could do a show, you know, but face covers and 6 feet social distancing.
And social distancing, yeah.
How do you do an event with social distancing?
A lot of people didn't. I mean,
It's hard. It absolutely was. And I think it's a very fair assessment in general when it comes to independent wrestling. I think that's a common feeling of, you know, whether it's you feel jealousy or anger or, you know, the sense of, you know, it's hard to explain, but it's a very human emotion, very human thought. And it was challenging because, of course, they have the resources, the means to do those things, whereas other independent promotions just don't have that kind of capacity. But, you know, that was the lifeblood. Live events is the lifeblood of independent wrestling. And as much as promotions could pivot into other opportunities and events, whether they did streamed events, closed door events, whatever it was, at the end of the day, you know, there is a life cycle to it, but especially talking about how much safety is important to your school and to your live events and to your family. I mean, at the end of the day, it's that seems to win overall, you know, the safety of everyone involved. And hopefully that brought some peace of mind of, you know, you were doing everything else in the means that you could, while also keeping everyone safe until, you know, a certain threshold could happen. And then you could, you know, get into that next level.
I actually felt like I was a Holiday Inn commercial where I was a COVID-19 doctor all of a sudden, because like I was consistently having to read up on do's and don'ts and what can be done and what can't be done and testing and what's that window of testing? Is it 3 days? Is it 4 days? And, you know, it was just a nonstop thing. And I had to consistently educate my students and my family and so on. And even now, like our academy, in order to train our academy, whether a current student or brand new or coming back, you have to be fully vaccinated. You know what I mean? And I know I've lost some students from that, and I've been able not to gain some new ones because of it. But for a peace of mind, you know, for the time being, it's well worth it. You know what I mean? If I lose 3 students because of that, then I lose 3 students because of that. I just don't want to come home, you know, get a cold. I got a cold 2 weeks ago, and like the world stopped around me. You have a cold. And I was like, yeah, but I'm vaccinated. Relax, you know, relax. Relax. And every day was like, hey, you okay, boss? You okay? Oh my God, I have a cold. Stop.
Everyone calm down.
Like, you know, like, yeah, your mom calls me, oh, you okay? Yeah. are you okay? You know what I mean? And so it's weird because during the pandemic, ah, it's fake. It's not going to happen. Da, da, da. And then eventually, ah, it'll never happen to me. But now we're vaccinated. Ooh, you have a cold. Well, which is it? You know what I mean? Like, which side of the fence are you on? You know what I mean? So doing shows moving forward. At first, like you guys mentioned, social distancing was a thing. So I just didn't want to do a show. So I started looking for outdoor venues, you know, doing events on football fields and stuff like that. But I just didn't feel like that was me. I didn't feel comfortable. You know, I like having fog. Anyone that knows me, I am that fog whore. I love to just hit the button on the fog. And I'll hear my guys like Paul and Brandon, stop fogging the fucking building. You know, I'm like, sorry.
You need to work with Defy. They love their fog up here too.
Yes, Matt. Yes. Yes.
I was gonna say that's why you can do shows in San Francisco. You just,
right?
Yeah. You don't even need to door, bring the right?
Yeah. Bring it all in. The door, the fog comes in, right? Yeah. Yes. And you know, so like I just wanted to do that, and then I remember sitting. Waiting for the announcement for our governor to say that we're going to be open, and he opened, right? And so then I went to all my venues that I have to rent, and I literally was refreshing the website for a half hour, you know, refresh, nothing. Following a Monday morning, a Sunday evening, I refreshed, and the dates were available, and I panicked. I didn't know what date to pick, what's right, what's wrong. Should I do it? Do I not do it? Is there talent available? Is there not? Oh my God, what do I do? And I'm screaming for my wife, Shannon, what do we do? Which date do we get? So I think you already had a date. I don't know if that is that the right one. You know, I'm just, and she's like, is that a good date before you lose it? You're not the only one that's going to be refreshing the website. So I booked it and I paid them. And I already had, I totally forgot that I already had deposits made for venues that I did in a year ago that I forgot I even paid them. And they're like, well, we just added your last deposit to the one you had in 2020. So you wanted to add it on top. I'm like, yeah, just put it on top. And then lo and behold, you know, the nervousness starts to go away little by little. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's almost like you were married, divorced. And you have to go dating again. You know what I mean? It's like,
yeah. Or looking for a new house.
Right. I mean, it's like, hey, do they still talk that way? Or do you still ask, you know, like, how does that work? You know, you're just terrified. You're terrified, like, hey, you know, and it's scary, you know, and it's, you get those jitters in your stomach going, man, should I do this? Should I not do it? But the only way that we're going to turn the corner is by leadership and education. And I think that's my goal, to try to keep mental health up with my students and my family, Lucha community, with the people I work with, try to do positive, try and bring events. As long as there's safety and follow regulations, I think that's all I can do as a promoter and as a human being. And, you know, leave the business better than when you found it, you know, yeah. Is the whole idea. So that's what I'm trying to do. And I already have things going on for 2021, you know, 2022 and 2023. Like, my mind is, I'm never satisfied. You know what I mean? I currently have plans for next year to do our first shows in Japan. Was supposed to happen in 2020 and it didn't happen. Obviously this year it's not going to happen, the Olympics and so on. So knock on wood, the plan is to do, you know, the following year to do stuff in Japan, to return to Dragomania in Mexico. That's another milestone that we were doing on a regular basis. Obviously I stopped. So I'm trying to pick up where we left off, but doing Japan is a huge bucket list for me. I've always been a fan of Lucha. Lucha has always been, you know, something with me, with my father, you know, being born in Guadalajara, Jalisco. And that's the culture I grew up on, and living in the States, my parents being immigrants, you know, taking me to the NWA in San Jose, which was run by Roy Shires. And they once in a while would bring in talent from the Americas, from Carl Lawler in Los Angeles. So I grew up on Chavo Guerrero and Mando Guerrero, Hector Guerrero, Mil Máscaras, Dos Caras, you know what I mean? Yeah. All that, you know what I mean? I grew up on that, and I still had my favorites, like a Piper and the Chavo and Piper feud of that era. But I also got to see my dad get chased around the arena by Pampero Firpo, you know? And Pampero Firpo, if you guys aren't familiar with him, used to come out kind of like a Bruiser Brody, and he would like file his teeth with a nail file, and he was just like the savage. And then my dad would always scream, hijo de puta, hijo de puta. And Look at my dad. I didn't like. He knew my dad was his mark, right? So every other Wednesday, hijo de puta, hijo de puta. And my dad got ballsier and ballsier. And so for some reason, my dad actually must have got overtime, and we got front row this time instead of being in the back of the seats. And here comes Vampiro Firpo, and he goes, hijo de puta, and he got in my dad's face. And I think my dad got startled, and he kind of dumped his soda on him.
Oh, no.
Jumped the guardrail and chased my dad into the snack shack. And so then running from Vampiro Firpo, and now I'm like, oh, my God, my dad's going to die. You know? Vampiro Firpo is going to kill my dad. Who's going to tell mom that dad got beat up by Vampiro Firpo? You know what I mean? And that was like, oh, my goodness. So I had my favorites, but nothing ever gave me that feeling of seeing the capes, the glitter, the masks, all, you know, that to me was just something different, you know, as a superhero, you know. And I even got to do stuff like with Andre the Giant, you know, bless his soul. He would come out on the babyface steps and watch the matches. And I was like, holy shit. And my dad goes, go over there. So you go over there and, you know, once in a while, a handler would tell you to get away, but this time there was no one saying anything. And there was a kid in front of me who put his hand in his hand, you know, and they could tell, you know, oh, wow, right? So I did the same thing. And then I was I was trying to, like, palm my hand on his hair because it was like an afro, right? Like, I never had seen something like that. And he told me to hold it. Like, he goes, grab it, you know. And I'm like, what? So I grabbed it, and I held on, and he pulled me up with his hair. Cool. You know, I'm like, holy shit.
This is unreal.
This guy just, you know, and I went back to my dad. My dad's like, what happened? I'm like, you know, he pulled me up, and yeah, I'm just going to sit down now, you know. It's just, you know, so like a 5, 6, 7-year-old, that's what I grew up with my father, you know, and nothing, great. And nothing changed because my dad was always cheering for Chavo Guerrero when he would feud with Piper, right? That's a given. We all feuded, you know, we all love that, and Dr. X and all that stuff. Yeah. But when Mil Máscaras would come in, and it was just something different. It just was a different reaction from my parents, from my family. It was my culture. I grew up in an era where, and obviously we still do now, where, like, you didn't know how to react to your own culture, right? You don't know whether it's okay to clap or not, and that's sad to say, but that's what was in front of me. And when I finally got the opportunity to do Lucha, that's one of the guys I had to bring in from my dad. And it was crazy, you know, a hero for many years. Now you got to be in the car with him and talk to him. And it's like you come full circle in this business sometimes. And, you know, sometimes you don't want to meet your heroes because you don't want to look at them as associates anymore. You want to still look at them as heroes. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But this is my 25th year in the industry. I've touched both Lucha and American, but Lucha for me is something that's in my heart. It's something that, you know, goes back with my parents, and I get to share it with my kids. And my eldest daughter at one point was a referee for me. Now my youngest daughter now does not want to do with the business as far as wrestling wise. She wants to do merchandising. She wants to sell stuff. Wow. You know, that's what she wants to do.
You've hit on both of my areas here.
Right?
So.
She critiques my flyers. You know, I'm a Marcom graphic designer and stuff, and she'll walk in my room in my office. She'll go, Dad, what are you working on? Well, the poster for so-and-so date. She goes, yeah. See, I don't like that guy right there because see how the color blends, Dad? You need a little bit more contrast and pop. So, and I look at her, and I'm like, okay, sweetheart. No, Dad, I'm serious. I want to see you do it in front of me.
Oh, so she's not even taking you later.
Yeah. She wants to do it right, you know. So I can't beat that, you know. I can't beat it, you know. I get to live wrestling. I get to be, you know, something I get to share with the family, and I get to be part of the Lucha community. That to me, it's second to none.
How do you help get that Lucha, like the cultural feeling of Lucha, over to fans on the, like, the sponsored shows you do, and fans that might not be Lucha savvy? Like,
yeah,
that's hard.
That's why we're asking you. Like, that's what
we're trying. I was thinking Dustin would tell me the answer. I'm like, Dustin, tell me. How do
I wish I knew.
Right, you too. You know, which I was having this talk with my kids yesterday after we set up. the first thing when someone sees a ring set up, they always go, is there going to be boxing? Like, that's the first thing. Hey, boxing going to be? Who's fighting? And it's like, no, we're doing wrestling. Oh, that fake shit. I'm like, oh, my God.
Oh, and then they, yeah. Oh.
But the thing is, you're never going to be able to educate someone in a flash period. You know what I mean? I can't educate someone in a spot show for the city and so on. But what I can do is I can pull on their strings of emotion. I can pull on their strings as far as like what we do, who to cheer for, how to cheer for them. For example, like the Border Patrol. I actually have a tag team. It's no secret that I have a tag team called the Border Patrol La Migra. It's trademarked. It's copyrighted. It's mine. I own it. I didn't invent it, but I perfected it. And be surprised that when the Border Patrol comes out, you always have these like split cheering and booing because people don't know how to handle it, right? But towards the end, they're all being booed and hated. But guess what? Show's over. Little line for merchandise for the Border Patrol to give them a picture because they understand it's over the top. And the thing is, with our culture in Mexico, we, to my feeling, how I deal with our culture is they're okay going over the top because they understand what we're doing.
It's all part of the show. Yeah.
It's like, you know, Nikolai Volkov, Iron Sheik during, I mean, WWE did some crazy thing at some really awkward times. There's war going on and Sergeant Slaughter became heel and, it, you know, then you had Nikolai Volkov and Iron Sheik during the Cold War. They went into it deep. I did, you know, the Border Patrol tongue in cheek. You know what I mean? I had Hijo de Trump, you know, LA Knight. He was my champion as El Hijo de Trump. Trust me, when I did that, people were like, are you out of your – I know David Marquez called me, and he goes, are you effing kidding me? I was like, I know. I go, don't you love it? He goes, no. I go, that's the reaction I want. That's what I want. And he'd come out, and he'd study, you know, the mannerisms of Trump. And trust me, he could wrestle the broom, and they'd be like, come on, broom. You know what I mean?
Yeah. He worked a couple shows up in this area with that gimmick. It was amazing.
That's what it was supposed to be. But when you do a quick show, it's rough. It's rough. So my best way to educate them on that is I have the very infamous, popular stadium horns, which are very common in lucha shows.
Yes.
I love. Everybody seems to hate. So when they hear a horn, I know they may not right away think of lucha, but they may think soccer. They may think international. So I try to do little bits. I have, you know – little I have masks, you know, the $5, $10 masks that you sell at shows, and I give them away to some of the kids so they can put it on and run around with their parents and stuff. Yeah. And so when they go home, I want them to at least have a little piece, and maybe they'll do their part to look it up because, I mean, the kids wearing the mask, they're going to ask. And I've had many parents ask, well, who is that guy? You know, oh, that would be Blue Demon Jr. Oh, that's Dos Caras. That's whomever, right? And that's my part for them. But to educate someone at a quick show – it's difficult, you know. It's something that, you know, how do you bottle a culture of, you know, hundreds of years, you know, in half an hour? It's impossible. But all I can do is plant a seed, and hopefully they can nurture it from there.
Well, okay, so I'm just gonna jump in with this one. We're kind of leaning into it. You train people specifically in Lucha Libre as well as American style, but how do you handle that if someone walks in? They've got expectations. They have, you know. So up here we had at least a couple wrestlers who had never seen the American product but had always seen Lucha Libre. Do you handle that differently? Like when you're doing TV and promo classes, do you handle like this is how they handle this in Mexico, or do you just you know?
Well, the thing is, Mexico, in my opinion, Mexico has lost its edge in a sense that Mexico only is becoming to copy what we do here in the States, sadly.
In a lot of ways. Yeah.
So if you consider AAA mocks WWE, you know, to a T, hence where Triple Mania came from and all the gimmicks and the way they handle stuff, right? CMLL has stayed classic, you know what I mean? But then that's everyone says that's her hinder, and they don't want to grow. They only have the Alzheimer's and so on. So it's kind of hard to tell them how you did stuff, you know, here and there. So for me, what I try to do is I try to blur lines and combine the best of both worlds. You know, a good promo is still a good promo in English or in Spanish. You know, you have to have the fundamentals. You have to have the storytelling. You have to have the levels of voice and tones and ups and downs and when to scream, when not to scream, when to be angry. So if you can just do a good promo, whether it's English and Spanish, it still has to be done correctly in order for it to make sense. You know what I mean? So you have that. But you do get a lot of people who come into our doors who don't know what Lucha is and, oh, I want to be American and so on. But then you ask them who their favorite wrestlers are and some of them say Andrade or, you know, some of the Lucha guys in WWE. And I'm like, well, what do you think that guy is? You know, where do you think that guy came from? So it's a lot of education. You know, back to your question, Dusty, that's when I do have to educate people that do come in through our doors and, you know, how our business has evolved completely. You know, how someone like Dragon Lee, you know, is carrying that Lucha flag per se in ROH, in New Japan and so on. And that's something that I like to teach them and explain to them, because a lot of people have this nuance about Lucha just being, you know, a bunch of people flying around the ropes and no psychology and stuff. And that's the furthest thing from the truth. If you actually watch Lucha and you understand Lucha, the shoot aspect and the grappling, the Ras de Lona that goes with Lucha Libre is there. Just because your only exposure to it might have been WCW and so on, where you only have 8 minutes to showcase something. So they showcase what's, you know, the jumping on the ropes and so on. But if you learn Lucha and you know Lucha and you watch someone like a Negro Navarro, come on.
Yes.
You know, if you ever watch Negro Navarro and Zack Sabre, watch that match. Watch Negro Navarro, which is Zack Sabre, and that's going to show you what the blend of Lucha wrestling is, because Zack Sabre is not a luchador, but he's versed in wrestling.
Yeah.
I mean, and it just shows you what it is. So it just depends what open mind they have to our sport, especially to Lucha Libre. And, you know, people do have that idea of that we're only one certain style, but if they have the patience and they really want to learn, in the end, they'll understand that it's just not one aspect. There's many aspects to what we do in Lucha, and it's my job to make sure I have the right trainers to educate them in that aspect.
That's great. I just got thrown under the bus. I was told that is one of the questions I'd written down, and I... Okay. So we're on the subject of wrestling schools, and we're talking about what you do and how you educate. So, I'm going to go with a more broad question here. So, because as I mentioned, this is a thing I support, though. A student is looking for a good school. What should they be looking for, and what can they expect when they walk in the front door?
Well, I mean, as far as a training school, I mean, I think the most important thing, you know, that people overlook is you need to go to a school that actually has an insurance policy.
That's a very strong point, actually.
Yeah. Because, you know,
when nothing, no students or incoming students think about.
Yeah. And people always like I've seen tons of wrestlers who were on the indie scene and make it to a higher level. Which is unheard of anymore, right? Because every, you know, all the higher tier names like WWE, they're creating their own talent who are track and field all stars and bodybuilders and so on, who've never worked on any date in their life. So they don't know what it is to put up a ring and stuff. I'm not saying that they don't value or they need to be where they're be at, but they don't understand how to live out of your car and pay those dues and all that stuff, right? Well, for a school, they always say, well, find out who their trainer is and who have they trained and stuff. You know, that's fine. But what about an insurance policy in case somebody gets hurt and breaks their leg or a pinky or a toenail or something? Who's going to cover them then?
Right.
At our academy, we have an insurance policy. Anyone that comes in, you know, you – God forbid anything happen. You know, Miranda comes in, she does a flying arm drag and she sprains her ankle and she has to go to Kaiser or she has to go somewhere. And well, let's say she can't go anywhere because she doesn't have insurance. and which is not very uncommon. It's very, 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 very common that you don't have your own insurance. Well, I'm not telling you that I'm Kaiser. I'm not telling you I'm an HMO, but what I am telling you is Miranda went to ER. They charged her $500 for x-rays, two ibuprofen, a pat on the back, and she went home, right?
Yeah.
And so she ices her leg down, right? Thumbs up. Miranda's good to go. But now she has a bill of $500, right? Well, Miranda, you give us your invoice. I give it to my insurance company. They verify that what you went is legitimate, it's real, and it's paid for.
Yeah. And I mean, it does happen.
It does happen.
My very first class, I had to draw to leave because I wound up landing on my shoulder on a forward roll. Like, that's just a thing, right?
More push-ups. You got to do more push-ups. You got to get more
training. But it's still going to happen. You're still going to have somebody who didn't do enough push-ups or didn't, you know, or they didn't respect the mat enough and thought they could just throw themselves at it and everything would work out fine or whatever. But it happens. It does happen. And I'm not trying to blame the students here. I just gave it a terrible example. But
it is a contact sport.
Yeah.
It's a contact sport. It's like playing, you know, football. And any kind of contact sport from little league all the way to high school to college, you're going to get hurt. I mean, you're hitting yourselves and you're throwing yourself to a mat and you're tackling, you're bumping. You're going to get hurt. Now, what that level is, you know, it just comes down to, you know, being safe, being taught correctly. But there is tons of possibility that's going to happen. It does happen all the time, but it gets swept under the rug with like, oh, you know, walk it off and stuff like that. I get it. I'm not saying that we're the best ever, but I am not willing to risk my livelihood, my daughter, their college, any of that because I wasn't prepared as a business. Yeah. And that's where I consider myself treating wrestling. I'm not treating it like I was broken in by Roland Alexander. He was broken in, you know, by Roy Shires and so on. And Roland also has his own stigma to him. But I don't want to treat wrestling like if it was in the 70s anymore. But some of the elements of respect from the 70s, I still hold true with what we do. But I also want to treat what I do as a business. I'm an actual LLC. I pay taxes. I have insurance for my events. I know tons of companies who run events with, you know, no insurance. Nothing's going to happen. But the thing is this. It's like car insurance. Everything great when nothing happens. But the moment it does, that's when your mind starts just unwinding, going, oh, my God, what am I going to do? Oh, my God. And for me, it's just a peace of mind. So God forbid anything ever happen, knock on wood. It can happen and it will happen. But it's that safety precaution. So every student that walks in my door, I tell them, you know, it could happen. Absolutely. But if it happens, like I explained to Miranda, this is what's going to happen. It's how we take care of it. And that's something a lot of people will go, oh, really? We didn't even think of that. Or yep. That's doable. And that's one thing that I hang my hat on that. Whether you're with me for a month or some of the guys who are with me now 5-6 years, that if it does happen, we're going to cover it. And that's why we get the insurance. That's what it's for.
I think that's valuable advice for anybody looking for any wrestling school. Those guys on the East Coast that have a million schools to choose from, don't look at the instructors first. Look at the insured ones. Then look at the instructors, right?
I also recommend that look for a location actually is a business. The reason I say that is because if you're a business, then you have different settings for your facility. So if you run out of a facility and you're not a business, that means that the guy that you rent that facility from, he can close shop tomorrow. And then when you show up to class, Miranda, you knock on that door and the door's locked. That's it.
Why? You've already paid, you know.
You've already paid, exactly. So and they're gone.
Took your money and ran. Yeah. Very.
So what are you going to do?
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Who are you going to chase down for your $100 or $200 to get back because the doors are closed? So if you work for a school or you're looking for a school and they're actually in an LLC, that means they're actually odds are in a building that also has structure and they're not going to run away either. You know what I mean? So the building I'm at now, we're going on 15 years. You know what I mean? I'm not going. I just signed a new 5-year lease. I'm not going anywhere. You know, so I need to make sure that I let every student know that when you come back to class, the door's not going to be locked. You're not going to be able, you know, to, you know, I didn't, you know, just put everything in the trailer and run away. No, this is what I do and this is what we train and these are my trainers and I may change a trainer from time to time, but I'm an LLC. I'm a company. The structure I'm at, it's just not an empty warehouse. No, there's other businesses around me that we're here to make, you know, make a living off this, right? As best as possible. So once you have, you know, an insured, you know, training school and you have someone that's a company, then you can start looking at the other stuff. I recommend to look at your trainers. If the guy has only been training, you know, if the guy is on the same shows that you're going to be on, he should not be your trainer because he has other fish to fry. He's not there to make you better than him. You want someone who wants to make you better than what he was because he has no skin in the game on the show. He doesn't, you know, he's not looking to take your booking from you. You want someone to educate you from day one to the end, but not collide with you. You know what I mean? And there's nothing wrong with assistant trainers to help out with beginners and so on, because that's very common. You know, the fundamentals, the forward rolls and quarter rolls and, you know, back bumps and schoolboys and stuff like that. But when it goes deeper to more advanced stuff, you know what I mean? It's like, consider a player manager in baseball, or, you know, I think the only common play I've ever seen a player manager. Well, what if, like Pete Rose, you know, what if you're a first baseman, Dusty or Miranda, and Pete Rose plays first base? Are you feeling comfortable with him, you know, as your manager? Yeah. You know what I mean? You're like, you're going to think in your head, well, what are the odds of me playing today? Because, you know, it's one of those things. You know, so in wrestling, you know, it's too many egos. You know, there's too many, you know, backdoor stuff. I'd rather have trainers who are going to, who their first criteria is to train, and secondary, if anything, is to wrestle. You know what I mean? That's the most important thing. And then also, what other guest instructors do they bring in to show you outside of the world, outside of small things, because it's always good to learn from others. Whether it be, we just had a Dragon Lee seminar. That's unheard of. Yes. Dragon Lee had never done a seminar in his life, and he approached me and goes, "You think I can do one?" I was like, "Oh, we're gonna find out, right?" And we did it, and he showed up, and he told me, he goes, "Brother, he's a thank you. I've always wanted to. I just didn't think anyone would be into it." And we had a 4-hour seminar. And he was telling us stories that, you know, which I was aware because we talk, but he was telling people how before he ever got into a ring, he had to do boxing, Olympic style wrestling, Greco-Roman, before he could even train in a wrestling ring. Those were the measures that he had to do and accomplish before his father said, "Okay, now I'm going to train you." And so people were like, "Oh, I didn't know that." And so then, lo and behold, for the first 2 hours was just a Olympic style Greco-Roman wrestling. And that should be, that to him is common. To talent that did it, were like, "Oh, wow, that's cool. A wrestling move for pro wrestling. Go figure, right? You know, how cool is that?
I learned a wrestling hold today."
What? Right, you know. And so that's the thing, is you got to be able to have some people come in. And when I say seminars, and it's a sore subject, but not a money grab. Not former or something, and they come in and you talk for an hour and they shake your hand and take a picture and they leave, and you spent like $100 for something, you know. Mm-hmm. So you have to make sure that you have good trainers, and don't hang your hat. They don't have to be someone that you know, because there's a lot of wrestlers in this world that are great, that never got a break, that can teach you so much. Mm-hmm. So, you know, respectable trainer, someone who's been doing it for a while. A good location, a safe environment, you know, a good ring, safe location, you know, and that's it, you know, that and the school has to be able to provide you all those things that go with it, you know, the safe environment, the insurance, the trainers, a good ring, you know, a place with a restroom, you know, a place with a lobby, you know, things that you just don't walk in and then you walk out, or you have to go across the street for a restroom, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You want to be able, you know, if they're going to charge you a fee like it's a business, then you should also get that in return as well. You know what I mean? And that's only me. If somebody else is running the school and they think the way they have it is best, more power to you, you know. But for me, our world is coming full turn, you know. Everything's a business. Everything – and the world of social media, you can't even fart and do it wrong, because someone's going to go, look, he farted the wrong way. Look, I have it on video. You know what
Got
I mean?
It.
What are you going to do? You know what I mean? So it's just one of those things that we just have to keep in mind, and that's how I handle my stuff. And I've met with great success. And I know there's tons of other great schools that do great stuff and produce great talent. But for me, those are the safety measures that in the world we live in now, are an absolute must.
Very, very important. And going back to almost full circle in this conversation, the business relationships and dynamics you've built throughout the Lucha community help support that. I mean, for Dragon Lee to think no one would ever want to come to a seminar is
right?
insane. It's right? insane. Yeah, but the fact that you had the very, you know, housed the very first one and the quality of that seminar too is a testament to, you know, the business acumen, the relationships that you've built, and the importance of putting together a quality product consistently through multiple pathways, through shows, through merchandising, and through training.
Absolutely. Thank you very much. Cause it does take time to build, you know what I mean? I started in 1996 carrying bags and building yeah. rings and stuff. And so I still do it. You know, I still pick up talent. I lead by example. I always tell my kids, lead by example. You know, I mean, I should be able to put up my own ring because it's my ring. You know, if I don't show you how to do it, and then, you know, it's not about free labor. It's, you know, it's, I'm out there with them. You know, I was out there with them yesterday. I'll be out there on the 15th. I'm be out there with them in the trenches doing what they're doing. Cause otherwise then I don't want to be that guy in the, you know, in the far distance, you know, with a whip. Come on, guys, work. That's right. That's not who I am. That's not who I am.
I'm gonna give a little bit of the extra pitch on this too. Anybody out there that is still having a little bit of trouble financially supporting wrestling, this is a great way. Talk to somebody at the schools, at the shows, say, you know, I mean, set up chairs, sell t-shirts, whatever it is you can do. There's always a job for a volunteer. And I know you don't necessarily want free labor, but at the same time, if somebody's willing to help and that's the only thing they can offer, that is one of the best things you can do to help.
I actually thought Brendan was going to ask me for a booking when he first opened that statement.
No.
I was like, oh, here it comes. He's going to ask for a booking. Oh, here we go.
No.
La parejita, parejita. No, échame la mano. No, la parejita. Vamos. And I was like, here we go.
Nope.
No, actually, that's how I started. You're absolutely right. That's how I started. I went to a show earlier on in 96 and I walked into a small building and I was like, whoa, wrestling so close up. This is crazy. I love it. And then when I got the opportunity, that's what I did as well. I said, hey, before I start training or someone, can I help out? And there I was driving guys to the airport, you know, which I was like, this is great. I'm hanging out with Christopher Daniels now. This is awesome. You know, so I'm talking to Christopher Daniels about, you know, his time in Michinoku Pro, you know, taking him to the hotel and stuff. Now, when I see Christopher Daniels, I'm like, hey, brother, remember when we used to drive? Yeah, I remember. Because that's what I used to do. You know what I mean? I used to pick up the talent, take him to the hotel and the airport, which people may take for granted. But trust me, when you have a show, there's many times you're like, oh, my God, who's going to pick up the talent? Oh, my God. And you know what I mean? It's like, oh, hey. Yeah, it's like, you know, or someone who's willing to stay at the airport for 17 hours because the
flights,
you know,
are delayed. And,
yeah, flights are delayed or TSA or whatever, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I remember Ultimate Dragon, when I first booked him out, he was in TSA for 4 hours. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's just one of those things, you know what I mean? So, you know, setting up chairs, ring crew, you know what I mean? It's all needed. There's always help needed in all aspects. You know, you're never too big not to have enough help. You always need enough help. Just be honest with promoters. Be honest what you can do. Honest what you're hoping for. You know, if you want to set up the ring and you can't afford a ticket, but you say, hey, man, can I set up chairs, whatever? I can't afford a ticket. Can I help you out? Odds are if they say no, then they say no. But possibility they say yes. Next thing you know, you've opened the door for yourself in the sport that you love. I tell it to my kids all the time. You guys invest in t-shirts and pay-per-views and merch and so on. Sometimes it's good to start investing in yourself. You know what I mean? So when you start investing in yourself, that's when you start opening doors for yourself that lead to other pathways that you'll never regret.
Very, very true. Well, Gabe, thank you so much for joining us on the Lucha Central Weekly Podcast English Edition. Before we wrap up, the stage is yours. Anything else you want to plug? If you'd like to let our listeners know where they can find you and Pro Wrestling Revolution on social media, the stage is yours.
Well, first off, I wanted to make sure that Dusty knows that he talked a bit too much during this whole time here. So, Dusty,
yeah.
So, Dusty, next time, calm down. You know what I mean?
Will, yeah,
too
try.
Many questions. You know, you didn't let nobody else talk. So,
yeah.
Okay.
You actually covered a lot.
No. You spoke enough. Yeah. English channels. Yeah. Yes, doable. Social media at PW Revolution across all social media boards. You can follow us there. We still have a website, www.prowrestling-revolution.com. You can find events, news bits. We were just featured in PBS for the second time this year, you know, stuff like that. You know, you can look at events, our news, our training academy, questions, whatever. Feel free to reach us out there on our social media. Somebody will reach out to you and give you an answer as soon as possible. And if you're still looking to fill out those collector items, www.lucha-mask.com for all your face cover needs at this point, depending how – I hope we don't need them no more, and I'm stuck with that inventory. But if you have something you want to pick up, collector's items and so on, now would be the time because they are going to be going away at some point. And besides that, I can't thank you guys for giving me a platform to babble for an hour or so for something that I love watching. So I'm thankful for letting you guys let me talk, give me this this soapbox, and I'm thankful for the opportunity. And if you ever guys need me to come on board or to replace Dusty, let me know, and I'll be up to
go. He's already booking himself in. I mean,
he was worried I was going to look over. I have a whole other page of questions I haven't asked you yet. So yeah, we're probably going to ask you back real soon.
Anytime. I'm here for you guys. I love to share my thoughts and my trials and tribulations with Lucha. And if I can help out or just shoot the shit with you guys, I would love to.
Sounds great.
Awesome.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you again to Gabe Ramirez from Pro Wrestling Revolution and lucha-mask.com for joining us on the very special interview for the Lucha Central Weekly Podcast English Edition.
Of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a Swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.